The mother-daughter relationship can be one of the most rewarding, complex relationships women will ever know. A recent Wall Street Journal article looked at one aspect, wondering why so many mothers help their daughters bankroll skimpy outfits that push the boundaries of what's age-appropriate for teenage girls. Well, our guest this morning says that's just one aspect of mothers who are anxious and unsure of themselves as they navigate the ground between mother and best friend. Good morning to you. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm glad to be with you here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This morning, the challenges facing mothers and daughters and why shopping isn't the answer. Our guest this morning is Susan Shapiro-Barash. She's adjunct instructor of English at Marymount Manhattan College and author of You're Grounded Forever. But first, let's go shopping. The challenges mothers face with their daughters and 10 timely solutions. And the door is always open for your phone calls. Why do mothers help their daughters make poor choices, like dressing sexy too soon? And how can mothers feel like confident parents when they have to say no? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can always send your email to talk@wpr.org. Susan Shapiro-Barash, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And what a great topic, if I say so myself. Just endlessly intriguing.
It is.
Our daughters.
Well, I'm sure you saw the article in the Wall Street Journal, and it was wondering about how mothers kind of aid and abet their teenage daughters, and sometimes, you know, tweens, these 10 and 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds, in dressing too sexy too soon. Why would a mother do that? What's going on there?
Well, it's really not as if the mother exists in a vacuum. I mean, what the mother is up against is tremendous peer pressure that their daughters feel, other mothers who cave in, so it almost becomes a contagion, and really what the culture yields. We have a culture that really tells us how to act and how to look. And so it's not as if you have a 12 or a 13-year-old daughter who comes home and wants to be in a certain outfit and you think she's original. It's that she's doing what everyone else does, and then the marketing, the stores, you know, what's available to the girls. But the real problem is that the girls don't even understand how they present. They're not ready for this kind of dressing and what it connotes. And they're, as the article said, I am familiar with the article, and I was very interested to read it. You know, the girls are at bas mitzvahs and bar mitzvahs, and they're teetering around in these, you know, I've seen it, you know, in the high heels and the little skimpy outfit. And it's really so hard for the mother to have a voice.
I guess because it sounds like you think of the mother as being against all of the societal pressure to look a certain way if you want to be popular, if you want other kids to accept you.
Well, you know, in my study, you know, my book, You're Grounded Forever, But First Let's Go Shopping, I interviewed women all across the country, whether their daughters were 3 to, you know, to the ages of 35. And virtually every mother, a very disparate group of women, said to me that they remembered being 12, 13, 18, 23, and what they endured, what they experienced, and that basically they wanted to make it easier for their daughters. But when your daughter's 12 or 13 and you're saying, sure, dress that way, when deep inside you say, I'm not comfortable with this, we have to ask ourselves the salient question, are we hindering or helping our daughters? And what are our values, and why are they drowned out by other values that are apparently louder? You know, heard better by our daughters. Why are our voices drowned out?
Well, you did interview about 300 mothers across the country, and it seems as though the prevailing emotion coming away from those interviews was this sort of low-level anxiety as mothers tried to navigate this ground. Why is that?
You know, this. First of all, these are boomer mothers and Gen Xer mothers. So we're looking at women who, in some way, mother their daughters in reaction to how they were raised by their mothers, which was a much stricter mother in those, you know, the prototype of the mother of the boomer and the Gen Xer was someone who said no and she meant no. And she wasn't as involved with the other mothers, and there wasn't as much competition about being a mother, about your daughter being the it girl. And so it was a much cleaner, clearer message. So when you say low-level anxiety, there's no question that we're very concerned about how our daughters fit in. Are they comfortable? Are they happy? And it kind of blurs our vision, so we don't have the same voice. If I interviewed a mother and she said to me, I remember my strict mother, I vowed I'd never do that. Fair enough, but again, what's the result? Being too lenient, not having enough boundaries, having a daughter who argues with you till you cave in when you want curfew to be 11 and she wants it to be 12:30. You know, these are the results of being very lenient or, you know, having these blurred boundaries.
Could you tell us a couple of the stories from your book that kind of get at what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. I interviewed a mother who had a six-year-old daughter, and her daughter was in school, and one of the errands the mother promised to do was go to the mall and get the daughter new sneakers. And when the daughter came home and saw the sneakers, she cried and said, "I couldn't possibly wear these sneakers. Everyone will laugh at me." And that's a really good example, because the question then becomes, well, what did you do? And the mother went back to the mall and exchanged them for an expensive sneaker that would be more accepted by her daughter's peers.
Hmm.
I interviewed one mother who said that she had her own issues. She had a 15-year-old daughter with weight, and that she was very concerned that her daughter was, and she was right to be concerned, that because mothers are the first and lasting female models for their daughters. So she was very concerned that her daughter was picking up on her own ambivalence, you know, her kind of yo-yo dieting, her, you know, using phrases like, "I was bad all weekend, but I won't eat ice cream all week," you know, whatever that message, and just how much the daughters are invested in their looks and their appearance already. So that's another new issue, is that mothers are very glamorous. You know, the boomer and Gen X mother today might go to the mall and choose the same pair of jeans as her daughter. But we all know that, you know, if you're a Gen X or a boomer, that when you went shopping with your mother when you were 16, there was nothing that you both wanted that was in the same department of the store, right? So you see, it's changing, it's blurring, and it's partly because the mother herself is invested in youth and being hip. But also the old paradigm holds true. We want our daughters to excel. We want them to have advantages, but, you know, that education yields. We want them to do well. We want them to be able to earn their own money. But if we don't have enough authority, then it's not really good for the daughters. And that's kind of what that article was saying. You know, why do we let our daughters dress like that?
I'm kind of astounded by the first story you told. That was a six-year-old. And in your book, you tell other stories.
I can.
about mothers. You say, this starts when these daughters are in kindergarten.
One woman I interviewed told me she had a seven-year-old daughter who said, now, the mother did have an older stepdaughter, a teenage stepdaughter, maybe about 17, but she said to her mother, "I need my hair keratin straightened." And the mother said to her, "Where did you even hear about that?" It was the older stepdaughter, you know, but stepsister. But the idea, she said her daughter felt so entitled. She said, "I hate my hair. You have to let me do this." So, you know, and then there are all these articles, because I did a lot of research, and a lot of what our daughters learn is, as I said earlier, these are cultural influences. So there were a few articles I read. One was in the New York Times that wrote, you know, that addressed the fact that when girls are 7 or 8 years old, they go for manicure birthday parties. And this is, you know, so they're very aware of beauty. But that isn't the only example. I'll tell you that one woman I interviewed said that she'd been very, very outspoken with her daughter, perhaps more than most mothers, about the boys she dated. And now the daughter was 27, and she herself had become pretty, you know, critical of the men she dated. And the mother really was second-guessing. Mothers second-guess a lot, according to my study. But she was second-guessing. Gee, have I been so hard on these boys that my daughter now is, you know, I fear now that maybe I've done some damage. So, you know what, mothering, this just underscores that mothering is a very tricky job.
It is. And why do you think it is that these mothers feel disempowered in their relationships with their daughters?
I think, as I said earlier, that it starts partly as a reaction, because if we look at sort of, you know, how it works in relationships, for instance, my own daughters tell me that they'll be much stricter than I was, which I find fascinating, because I've always been here to please them. That's one reason I wrote the book, you know, and did the study, was because I wondered if it was as pervasive as I thought it was. And so why do we feel so disempowered? We give up our power pretty early. And it goes back to sort of a reaction to our own mothers, who are much stricter and more buttoned up. It's partly that we're very invested in our daughters. Mothering has become truly, I used the word a few moments ago, a job. It's really, it used to be a role. you were a mother, you were a wife. You know, in the last 40 years, you were probably a working wife and mother. Certainly now, with over 70 million women in the workplace, that's frequently the case. But it was just part of the pie, big piece, but part of the pie. But it's very consuming now. It's almost a full-time job. You want your daughter to have certain friends. You want your daughter to have after-school activities. You want your daughter to get, as we said earlier, you know, great education, so she has to work hard early on in school to have that trajectory. We want her to have all these options at work. But, you know, I'm a professor, as you said. I teach gender studies at Marymount Manhattan College. And I've noticed over these last 14 or 15 years a difference even in the approach of students in terms of achieving, and this we've heard elsewhere, and I researched this, you know, the idea that they do so well, particularly my female students, they want to do so well because they've been so persuaded, so encouraged to do well, you know, that the grade is so important. And if they don't do well, you know, the parents are unhappy. And there's this whole concept of, of helicopter parenting. And how, you know, there was an article just recently in the Times or the Journal that I found quite curious, where it said that parents are, you know, that the colleges are now having rules. This is not at the college I'm at, but it was a university where the parents had to leave like within 12 hours of dropping their child because they hover cell. And the salient question here is, are we really, you know, fostering independence? Are we creating very dependent children who won't be ready to go out into the workforce? And for daughters, again, you asked me about an interview. I interviewed one mother who said that her daughter couldn't get a job when she got out of the school 2 years ago because of the downturn. And then when she finally got a job, she came home and told her mother she had a mean boss. And after a few weeks of talking about it, the mother thought maybe the daughter should quit. Well, we all know there are mean bosses, especially when it's your first job. So maybe our daughters need to toughen up a little so that they know what to do with a mean boss and they understand it's just part of the process. Hmm.
Well, your book isn't just about the problems. I mean, you identified what's out there and you told us a bunch of stories. What would you say about how to fix some of those problems? How would you give the power back to mothers, especially after they've kind of let the horse out of the barn door already? How do you start from there?
Well, I think that, first of all, the best thing we can do for our daughters is to communicate all the time how we feel and what our values are, because, as I said, they're, you know, our influence is often drowned out by other influences. So we have to repeat ourselves a lot more. And I think that it's never too late to have the conversation, whether your daughter is 12, 16, or 20, to say to her, look, I'm very uncomfortable. Perhaps I've said yes too many times in the past. But for this question, this request, whatever it is, I really feel that we can compromise in this way. And other times, perhaps you'll have to even say no, but to have the conversation, to pick and choose the battles, but to really, when you are saying yes and you really wish you were saying no, you have to have the courage. You have to take the risk. What's the risk? That your daughter will be dramatic? That's also very new, because the boomer mother, when she was younger, didn't, you know, throw a fit. But what will happen? That your daughter will be angry at you? You know, take the risk for the reward of really being comfortable with what's going on. And of course, another part of this study I found was that mothers really have to recognize their daughter's individuality. So if your daughter is a wonderful gymnast, but all the other girls in her class are in the debate team, you have to really honor what your daughter does best in her free time and do that, and not just, you know, sort of push her along because everyone's doing it.
Hmm. Do you have any stories about that, about some of the women that you've worked with that have been able to turn it around?
Yes, definitely you can turn it around. And as I said, you know, by having the conversation, and I think also by finding out what your daughter's really looking for, because one of the mothers said to me that she had three daughters, and by the third daughter, and this is, I think, a very common scenario, the third daughter, she was much more lenient with. She said she worked full time. She just felt tired. Some mothers are just worn down and tired. And so when she came home and all three daughters were asking something of her at 6 at night, and the little one wanted whatever she wanted, 2 sleepovers, Friday and Saturday night, instead of just one night of the weekend, she would just say yes instead of battling it out only to say yes in 2 hours. And I think that this is part of the problem, is that sometimes we're just too worn down.
Well, where are fathers in all of this? Do they get a free pass?
The fathers. The fathers are there, but the gender identity is so strong. The mother and daughter are so connected. Female gender identity is just strong across the board. That's why we, you know, another conversation, why women are so close to their female friends or so hurt if something goes wrong, and why our daughters will come home and be very upset about something that happened with friends, because this gender identity among women and females, among females, is very strong. So the mother and daughter really are bonded, you know, by that. And the father is in the picture, sometimes baffled, sometimes stricter, and the mother is sort of mitigating the circumstance, kind of saying, well, your father has said no, but let me see what I can do, sort of in a better. And sometimes the father throws his hands up and says, this is too much for me. You know, before when she was, you know, 11 and under, it was fine, and maybe when she's 20 and over, I'll be fine, but right now, this, you know, these teenage years are too much for me. And then, of course, I did part of the book, you know, I did a chapter on divorce and remarriage and what that does to the daughter. And so that's also something that we really need to consider, because if the daughter spends time with her father alone because she's a daughter of divorce, that's sometimes that father is more involved, just because divorced fathers end up having, you know, assigned times.
You know, it reminds me of when I was pregnant with my son. I remember a lab tech asked me what I was having, and I said a boy, and she said, good for you. Daughters are great until they're 10 years old, and then they're a nightmare. And I ran across that again and again, in this notion that, you know, you're sort of legally obligated to battle with your daughter as soon as she turns 12 years old. Is there something to that, or is that some sort of a stereotype, do you think?
Well, it's stereotypic for a reason. It's really what the experience is, and no one gets through adolescence so easily. And for daughters, it's really very hard. There are tremendous pressures. Again, we talked about beauty and weight. You know, are you the pretty girl? First of all, just 10 years and younger. Okay, but in this study, many of the mothers felt that by the time their daughters were in first or second grade, they already knew if they were already pegged. They already knew if they were the popular girl, the brainy girl, the athlete, the nice girl, you know, the doormat. So they understood how they fit in. And that's very hard for our daughters to be typecast so fast and so early. So the daughters are very self-conscious. And then you're right, after 10, it's really tricky for those next 5 or 6 years in particular. Adolescence is hard, and the girls, and I think the internet, I think social media makes it even harder.
We're talking this morning with Susan Shapiro-Barras. She's our guest this hour. She's an instructor of English at Marymount Manhattan College, and the author of the book we're talking about is called You're Grounded Forever, But First Let's Go Shopping. And we're interested in taking some of your phone calls this morning, too. What has your experience been with this mother-daughter bond? Do you think there is something that is an ingredient there that you might not find between fathers and daughters? Why is it so intense? And how can mothers feel like confident parents when they have to say no? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, and our email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There is a lot to look forward to today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's Salt Awareness Week, and Larry Mueller's guest will talk about the connection between sodium intake and cardiovascular health. And then at 11:45, Larry and his guest talk about the fascinating world of tropical pets and how you can choose and care for birds, fish, or reptiles that share your home. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're talking about the mother-daughter relationship this morning with Susan Shapiro-Barras. She is an instructor of English at Marymount Manhattan College and the author of the book You're Grounded Forever, But First Let's Go Shopping. We'll take our first phone call now. Beth is joining us here from Milwaukee. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Beth.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I love the topic.
Thank you.
I am the mother of a 9-year-old girl and a 12-year-old girl. And I think I've felt like I'm by myself because I constantly say no. And I get other moms who say, well, why are you saying no? Everybody else is doing it. But I've I've just always felt like the bad parent, but I jokingly tell my girls, well, if I'm that bad, too bad, and you'll just have to get therapy when you get to be an adult, because I'm not going to change my mind. However, on the inside, I'm so frustrated because when it comes to buying clothes, it is so difficult to find what looks decent and age-appropriate, especially if you have a 12-year-old who's well-developed. And there's just nowhere to go. And so we're faced with having to buy dresses that are so low-cut, strapless, backless, and even looking online, it's still very difficult to find something, if not impossible. So I would love to know where to go.
Okay, thank you, Beth.
Well, I first of all, I think that what Beth is saying is notable, because many mothers say the same thing, as if the stores just make it all the harder, which is, again, kind of a cultural messaging, that this is all that's available. And the fact that, Beth, is she still on?
I am.
Oh, good. And the fact that you are courageous enough to say no and mean it and feel comfortable with it is a very good thing. And interesting that the other mothers are involved and question you. In terms of shopping, if that's your question, what about more conservative stores? Are there not more? Is this for parties, for special events that you're?
Well, just even in general, every day, it is so interesting that there is just so little out there for someone who has a 12-year-old. Who's 5'4", who's curvy and busty. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She's not big.
And it makes it so awkward for her, too, really.
And, you know, I think at this point, because she has a few girls in her class who look like her, she doesn't necessarily feel out of place. I'm certainly not getting that impression, but I am definitely getting the impression that, well, you know, Mom, we have to have this kind of dress because this is what everybody wears. She says, I don't want to look like an old maid.
Right, so she's you have the problem so many mothers speak of, which is that there's this herd mentality. The daughter feels she really needs to fit in. You don't want to take a stand and disenfranchise her. That's the last thing a mother wants, is for a daughter to feel like she's standing out or is outside the group because of the way she dresses. So I think that you have to pick and choose your battles. That's what I would say, that you, when you're really uncomfortable with it, then you have to say something. If you can compromise and maybe find ways to make it less sexy, maybe a little jacket, a sweater, a sweatshirt over it. But if you this is the problem. So many mothers said that when they were strict, their daughters basically wore their sweat clothes out of the home and then got to their friends and changed into the sexy attire that everyone else was wearing. They had it in their backpack or they borrowed a friend's. So you don't want to put her in that position either.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Beth. And on to Bill. Bill's calling us from Elroy. Hi there.
Hi, Bill.
Hi. I just wanted to say that mother-daughter relationship doesn't exist in a vacuum, either in the family dynamic nor in society at large. I mean, I'm an old man now. I've got granddaughters ranging from 14 down to 2, and then finally I got lucky and got a grandson. but anyway, just speaking from my own experience, the first thing it takes is for the father and the mom to be together. You know, I mean, in a good family dynamic, you can't just have the father always take a back seat and let mom do whatever. It has to be, and then not just clothes, like we would have fights with our kids because of toys. I mean, Susie over there, she's got that brand new bike and blah, blah, blah. Well, we would say, I'm sorry, we cannot afford it. In fact, at the time, that was true. And but even if we could, we would say, you know, sorry, teach him denial, and you don't always have to conform. And I think our big problem is general moral decline. I mean, I remember when you would dress up, you know, to go to church, families would go to church, when they would teach Homer and, you know, the classics in school where you have traditional values, you know, like look at Jane Eyre, for example, right, where you see true poverty, sacrifice, and relationships in context of society in general, and people being able to think for themselves. I think Well, today we have a herd mentality that rules the roost.
But you see, you're bringing up two very important points. One is that materialism is at an all-time high, and that there really is pressure. And I've interviewed women who say they can't really afford to buy their daughter the book bag she wants, the pocketbook she wants, but feel pressured somehow to even sacrifice in order to please the daughter. And I think that that is very much culturally induced. So that is a big problem. And the fact that mothers and fathers should unite, that is absolutely true and really of great importance. If the parents can be united in what they say, when that happens, it's great. But sometimes I found in my study that the mother really felt she was caught between the father, who saw it as black and white, and the daughter, who needed it a certain way, and the mother wanting to please the daughter, but also understood what her husband was saying.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Bill. And I wonder, based on what Bill has said and others have said about limiting media, is that possible to do, limit time on Facebook and TV? Does that help, or is the culture just too widespread?
Well, it's in theory, it's a great idea. And parents who are strict about that, especially when the daughters are under 14 or 15, it's very significant if you can really control that. But often the daughters will go to a friend's house where the rules are not as strict, or the daughters will go to the library. And so it's really everywhere. It's pervasive. In my book, I talk to many mothers about what age you get your daughter a cell phone. And working mothers wanted their daughters to have them very early on, understandably, so they could check on them right after school. And those mothers refused to have anything else on the phones. They didn't want their daughters texting. They could, you know, follow that they were texting because of the bills. And so sometimes you can do it that way. You can say you have this phone for this purpose, or you can be on the internet for this research, but you can't be just, you know, instant messaging your friends, or, you know, if you have a project at school and there's information at this website. But basically, it's a bit out of control. It really is, and it's something mothers are aware of and can't do much about sometimes.
Hmm. Are there any guidelines that you suggest in terms of amount of time for that age group, or is it just...
Are you talking about 12 to 14?
Yeah.
Well, really, you know, the mothers told me that their daughters were, that they felt that they were imposing a rule when they said not more than a half an hour to 45 minutes on the school night. Hmm. But the fact that the daughters are so intrigued by it isn't, you know, we can't blame them. It's just what's out there. It's really very, it's, you know, for people who have lived much of their lives without it, even for the mothers, it's pretty interesting to see what it does to our daughters. Their life is very different. They're so technologically savvy. It's so fluid for them. And, you know, there was this whole study recently about mothers being on their own Blackberries when they're sitting with their children, and how we aren't really connecting. We're not intersecting. We're just parallel playing.
Hmm.
And so that's a whole issue, too.
Let's take another phone call now. Raven is joining us from Green Bay. Hey, Raven.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there.
And I just want to say that I think you're kind of generalizing when you say that especially the mother who is dealing with the daughter.
I'm sorry, I can't hear too well.
You're breaking up a little, Raven. Could you start over and we'll see if we have better luck this time?
I think that you're kind of generalizing when you say that it's mostly the mothers who deal with the daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends and me, when we have troubles at school or something, we usually go to our dads.
And how old? I think you said, Raven, but your phone cut out. How old are you?
14.
I'm sorry, we missed you again. I heard teen.
14.
14, okay, 14. Thank you. And is that, do you think, Raven, is that something new that you're seeing, or has it just always been that way, that you've got a lot of friends and they just want to talk to their dads?
I think it's because most of the time our mothers kind of, like, they're like, I went through it, so why can't you?
Hmm.
Uh-huh,
uh-huh. Sounds like some mothers who sort of are, I don't know, tough loving it, maybe want their daughters to learn to maybe not having that empathy that you would want. What do you think, Susan?
I think that it's individual, but I felt because from my study I spoke with mothers, and so anything that they reported about the fathers was from their point of view. And some fathers are more understanding, and as I said earlier, some fathers really do throw up their hands at some point when the going gets tough. But they're always in the picture, and what I think this caller is saying, I couldn't hear her name, I'm sorry.
It's Raven.
Is that these fathers are perhaps softer, are trying to make it easier on the daughters. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that just shows you, it's so hard to be a mother and a father, but the idea that the fathers are there as sounding boards, I think, is great. But then, the caller who came in earlier and said that, the mother and father have to be united front, that's also, of course, hopeful and important.
Well, thank you so much, Raven. I'm glad you called. And we'll go to another caller here. We've got Jane joining us from Marinette County. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Ben.
Hi. I agree with much of what you say, but I think a lot of the key is building a family culture where both the parents encourage siblings to work together and to really talk with your kids. If you establish a family culture, this is what we do, this is how we do it, and be sensitive to what their friends are doing, but you can buy clothes and if you need to alter them.
I agree with you. I think that what you're saying, and I'm sorry if I didn't mention it before, the message from the family, I think I kept saying the mothers have to express their values and always keep them in line and let the daughters know that this is what they value and what they believe in. But you're right. If the family has a certain voice and a standard, isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah, I have daughters who tell me, we're all going to the dance, but I know we're doing these other things, and so I'm not going to spend the money, but so-and-so is loaning me a dress. They know where the limits are.
I think that a mother who can do that and the family culture that endorses it is really at an advantage. So many mothers feel a little less strong about it. That's what I'm saying. But, yes, if you can say this is it, this is how it works for us, then your daughters understand early on.
We're talking this hour with Susan Shapiro-Barash. She is an instructor of English at Marymount Manhattan College and the author of the book, You're Grounded Forever. But first, let's go shopping. We're wondering about that intense mother-daughter relationship this hour, the challenges that mothers and daughters face, and how to empower mothers in that relationship. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. And you can always send us an email, too. It's talk@WPR.org. I'm Veronica Rickard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickard, keeping you company this morning on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn. As we talk with Susan Shapiro-Barash, she is an instructor of English at Marymount Manhattan College and the author of the book You're Grounded Forever, But First Let's Go Shopping. And our call-in number is 1-800-642-1234. And I want to read a couple of emails now, Susan. This is from Gina, who writes, I'm a mother of a tween, and my experience is this. If a young girl is not getting the attention she needs, she'll seek any attention she can get, oftentimes negative. My advice would be to spend time with your daughter. Make her feel special. Listen to the fight she has with her friends and keep the communication lines open. Make your home a place that she and her friends want to be in and make that time a positive experience for everyone. That sounds like pretty good advice.
Absolutely. The communication with your daughter and recognizing who she is as an individual and making her feel safe and protected, it's all very important. That's a great email.
And here's one from Denise in Madison who says, I recently went to Victoria's Secret with a friend the first time in 10 years, and I was appalled to see a section of the store that was marketing specifically to young girls. The girls in the ads looked as if she was 13 or 14 and wearing teeny underwear and a push-up bra.
Well, yeah, this just underscores what we were saying earlier, which is that the culture, the society, our society really endorses this and really gives the message that our daughters should be very sexy very early and they're not ready for it. And ironically, when they're 22, there's this whole new phenomenon that's occurring, and that is that they come home from college, and after having grown up so quickly and dressed a certain way so early in their lives, they enter a phase called emerging adulthood, which means that they're not quite ready to be full-fledged adults, and more young women and men are living at home after college than ever in America today, partly because of the downturn and partly just, you know, in terms of how they feel suited to get out into the world. So, you know, it's like Victoria's Secret at 12 and then at 22, wait, not so fast.
Do you think there's a way to prepare, you know, our children, sons and daughters, for that post-college age when they could end up, I mean, if, assuming the economy is better, you're hoping, I guess, that instead of coming back home, they're out in the world forging their way.
There are more options available for women in America, young women, women of any age, than ever before. And one of the best things I believe that we can offer our daughters, the best advice, the best wisdom, is to show them that, to promise them that if they have a talent, if they're interested in a certain field, to really encourage them and to encourage them to be ambitious. I think it's so important for women to be ambitious so that you can earn your own money in a very capitalistic society. And I actually have a whole chapter on that in the book because our daughters should be prepared to make it on their own and to be able to support themselves. So I think that's, you know, one issue that's very important for daughters today.
Well, tell us some about that chapter. What do you have in there that we should know?
Well, you know, of course, I write about, you know, what came out in the president's report a few weeks ago at the beginning of this month, which is that, you know, women still earn 75 cents on a dollar. So if you're a daughter and you're 15 years old and your mother has a great job, but she's hit that glass ceiling or she's, you know, not paid equal pay for equal work, that's something that you see, but you also see that your mother does have a job and that she is earning money, and that's a good thing. So I think we have to prepare our daughters for the reality of the workplace and the whole life balance that's such an issue for mothers. You know, many of the mothers in this chapter spoke about having to really figure out a way to have a great job and earn money and also be available to the daughters. So the daughters are keenly conscious of that. And I think, you know, it's very important for us to encourage our daughters to have ambition and to be independent.
Let's go back to our phones now. Leah is joining us here from Green Bay. Hi, Leah.
Hi there.
Hi. This is sort of a story of three generations. I was in New York over the weekend babysitting for my grandchildren, and one was an 8-year-old girl. And one of the things that I did as an activity with her, I said, well, okay, let's write a story. And so she was actually doing the writing, but we were talking about it, and her story eventually was about these rich and beautiful girls who are mean. And she spent a lot of time writing down, like, what they wore to parties. And I just was so taken aback because when I was 8 years old, I don't think I noticed what anyone wore. And then I was also thinking about her mother, who's now in her early 40s, and she still tells me how mad she was at me when she was 10 and I wouldn't let her watch Charlie's Angels because I thought it wasn't a good influence, and how she had to go to school and lie and pretend she saw it.
And that's why her daughter's so aware of, right, because there's that pendulum swinging. You were strict, so she's allowing her, you know, her daughter's exposed to a lot.
Yes, and even then she does put limits, but it's always hard for her it feels like it's hard for her to keep them. But I just couldn't believe all the things that my granddaughter was writing in this original story that
well,
I never would have thought about.
It just really speaks to the issues we're talking about. These girls at such a young age are so aware of fashion and are so aware of beauty and value it. You know, this is, again, this comes from our society, and it makes it very hard for them. It makes it much harder. And that's why we have to keep talking about our values, and as one of the callers spoke, about family values. Now, are you talking about New York City? Were you in New York City?
Yes. In fact, one of their regular sitters goes to your school.
Oh.
So, yeah.
She goes to Marymount, yeah. those students.
Yeah, I was just on the Upper East Side. You know, my granddaughter, who's 8, says she won't pull her hair back because her ears are too big.
I felt so bad.
I felt so bad because she's so cute and
it's very slick. It's very fast-paced. That's what you're really describing. But it isn't just in New York City. I want to say that the women I interviewed were from rural areas and small towns and suburbs all across the country, and found a lot of this, you know, their daughters were affected by it at the age of 8, no matter where they lived, very conscious of their looks and superficial aspects of, you know, their appearance, and not sitting down reading novels like their mothers did, you know, just a different, it's a whole different flavor, whole different style.
You know how periodically over the past, say, 5 years, there have been these movements that you hear about, they're reported with a lot of fanfare about how girls are choosing modesty over the skimpy clothes. And mm-hmm. JCPenney's, say, I think I remember, was one of the stores, is marketing to that. And they're introducing this more modest line of clothing. And then they just sort of sink and go away. And it seems to go back to the status quo, which is pushing sexy all the time. Are there any thriving modesty movements now? Or has that just sort of tanked?
I don't hear of anything like that being at the center. At the center, what I'm seeing based on my research is daughters who dress very much like the article we began talking about in this, the beginning of this hour, which is, you know, why do our daughters dress like that? Why do we allow it? And really the underlying issue, why do we feel that we have to allow it? Why is it that we're just pushovers? And that has to do with what's offered. And so I don't see much modest clothing, and mothers seem very fearful, as we said earlier, of rocking the boat by, you know, on the one hand, what's the big deal? It's just an outfit. On the other hand, if your daughter's so invested in it, well, then it is a big deal. If it's so important to your daughter, if she's so worried because you're not letting her wear the kind of dress to a 12-year-old party that every other girl is wearing, that she can't even concentrate on her homework, then mothers would say to me, I say, you know, that they would rationalize it. They would say, well, then just let her be happy. Let her wear the dress. I mean, what's the big deal? But it goes to a much deeper issue. How are we raising our daughters? You know, where are the boundaries? And one thing I do want to say before our hour's up, and that is a very, very big issue here is not to be your daughter's best friend, but to be the authority figure. Hopefully your daughter has some great friends. Hopefully you do. But your daughter really needs you as a hierarchical figure in her life. Even if you're close, it has to be hierarchical.
Can you talk about that a little more? Because I know there's a lot of mothers out there who really want to be their daughter's best friend. And then you have examples, you know, like the Gilmore Girls, where this idealized mother-daughter relationship. Doesn't every mother want that?
Well, idealized is the right word to idealize that. In theory, it sounds very enticing. First of all, it's a lot easier. You don't have to make the rules. You don't have to insist. You don't have to make excuses for your daughter because you are on her side all the time. You know, in my book, I found that mothers were always making excuses for daughters 12, 22, 30, 5. And I think that if you really buck up and you're the mother and you say, look, I understand how you feel, and to always communicate and say to your daughter, tell me why you're upset about this. Tell me why this is a problem, your grades, your friends, you know, this party, this boy, whatever it is, and to be available, but to also be an authority figure to say to her, look, I'm not happy with that. And I have a whole chapter on, you know, sex and romance and, excuse me, how early on our daughters are exposed to this, and that you really have to be the one in charge, the one who has experience and offers guidance for the daughters. So it's enticing to be the best friend, sure. It's easier, but it's really not in your daughter's best interest.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a hard one to swallow, I think, for a lot of people, but you make a good case for needing that figure there.
Well, when your daughter's older, she's 23, she's 25, you know, the paradigm shifts a bit. But many of the mothers, even with 30-year-old daughters, said that they still felt it best when their daughters came to them for advice, that they related so well to the issue, but that they felt that they were offering their experience and wisdom.
Hmm. Let's go back to our phone lines again. We have some people waiting to talk. Let's see. This is Joanne joining us from Eau Claire. Hey, Joanne.
Hi, Joanne. Good morning. I wanted to echo three points. First of all, what's important is to be the parent, the mother. And then years later, you get to be the friend, and it works out great. And I was very unpopular because we always knew where our children were and whom they were with. And I would always call to chat with parents before sleepovers, and that made me very unpopular. Oh, well, I was being the mom. And, yes, also fashion for teens is ridiculous. I would go out of my way to purchase capri pants for our daughter as opposed to short shorts or minis, and she still likes to do that. She now is 20, and she will purchase the longer shorts as opposed to the shorter shorts, but she's never been one to show a lot of skin. But I can't say that for all of her friends. But it works out great to be the parent first, and then later you get to be the friend.
I agree with you. And you sound very brave. Some mothers just aren't as brave, understandably, to be, as you said, an unpopular mother for calling and checking around. And I think earlier on we had a caller who said that the mothers didn't like it when she was calling, or something, you know, similar effect. And I think that to do that, to be in charge, to feel that you have, you to take on the responsibility and to really check it out is very important. And in the end, your daughter will feel safer. There was one mother in this book who told me that her daughter said to her, "Why weren't you stricter with me? Why didn't that would have been much easier for me now that the daughter was 27?" And you know, but that shows us, that makes us really think about what we're doing.
Maybe they feel safer when they've got those parameters and they can hide behind their mom instead of doing something they're not comfortable doing.
That's right. It just makes it easier and you feel very protected.
Well, thank you so much for that call, Joanne. And we go now to Emily joining us from Arborvita. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Emily.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and I'm so glad that we're focusing on this issue because I think more than ever in this generation, it's going to be a concern. I'm a preschool director, and I've recognized this issue way earlier in the years that I was even exposed in my age group. It's just odd how children, you know, they focus so much on the physical appearance now. You know, beauty comes from the clothes you're wearing and the dresses and the outfits and the makeup. And they almost give themselves that identity. And so much influence is that from our society. And it's just such a concern, you know. One of the best recommendations I give to parents or to staff when this issue comes up is, you know, when they make a comment like that, "Oh, you look so pretty in that dress," you know, just a good idea would be saying, "Oh, and I love your smile," or some kind of emotional or a psychological future.
How old are these girls?
I'm sorry, what?
How old are these students?
I've got, you know, I see this probably around 2 years old to 4 years, where, you know, they'll come in and a little girl is wearing maybe a yellow shirt, not a pink one, and the little girl come up to her and say, "Well, you don't look pretty. Look at me. I have jewels on my shirt."
Oh, my goodness.
And it's just such a concern. I'll go up to that, you know, situation. I say, "You know, the clothes that you wear don't make you pretty. I promise you, it's what you say and how you act," would be kind of how I react to it. And just also as a parent, too, and just the exposure in the school and out. You know, media is just everywhere. And we need to really protect these children. I'm going to get this book. It sounds very interesting. But another really good book that I read was Saving Childhood.
Mm-hmm,
I recommend that book.
Yep.
Thank you.
Well, I think it's so interesting what has just been said because, as I said earlier, that I had interviewed mothers of daughters 3 to 35, and here these girls are 2 to 4 and already keenly conscious of appearance and style. And the whole question of nature and nurture is at stake here because, and that's the whole idea of gender studies, you know, how much of it is culturally induced and how much of it is our nature to just be very feminine. And these young daughters are really influenced by both, and definitely the nurturing is a big part of it.
So emphasizing the nurturing there, I liked what Emily just said about complimenting a girl's smile.
Mm-hmm.
And not just what she's wearing.
Right, exactly. But how, and of course that's a great way to go. I really liked what she said. But the idea that the girls are already doing this. And that brings up another topic that I wrote about in the book. I have a chapter on female friendship. Because already that's a bit mean girl stuff going on there. If someone comes up to your daughter and she's two or three and mm-hmm. says, why are you wearing that ugly shirt? Or, you know, I paraphrase, but something like that, that was just mentioned. And, well, then our daughters feel very bad about themselves, and a friend isn't being a friend. And that, and in the study, in this book, I also wanted mothers to take a look at what kind of model they've been as friends themselves. Have you been a competitive friend? Have you been jealous of your friends, and have your daughters picked up on that?
And Susan, I'm sorry we have to leave it there. We're out of time, but thank you so much. We really enjoyed your book.
Thanks for having me on.
Our guest this morning, Susan Shapiro-Barash. She teaches at Marymount Manhattan College and is the author of You're Grounded Forever, But First Let's Go Shopping. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production and Chrissy Pease for production this week as well. Kathleen Dunn is back in the host seat next Monday. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.